Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Go, Matt Harmon here with you. No, not Matt Harmon. It is our pal, Alfredo Brown.
It's so much worse.
I don't know. No. I mean, here's the thing. Can Matt stop going on vacation, please? He is going on week number three of vacation. You heard him earlier in the week, but he is back on that vacation grind. So instead, we bring in our quarterback charter, Alfredo Brown. Alfredo, how you doing, pal?
I'm good. No vacation for me. Yeah. I see Matt like on rooftops drinking wine, eating steak, and I'm here just grinding Shadur Sanders film. That's our lives could not be more different.
Yeah, unfortunately for you, brother. We will talk about Shadur Sanders momentarily here, but we'll talk about Jackson Dart, Cam Ward, and JJ McCarthy here as well. If we got time, we'll talk about Tyler Shuck. I know you and I are both really high on Tyler Shuck as well. Talk a little bit about your background, though. I believe this is the first, maybe I'm wrong, but I think this is the first time that we've introduced you to our listeners here at RP.
It is, yeah. This is my first time here on Reception Perception, the show.
At least in terms of being a quarterback charter and profile for us.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is my first time here, and to be, you know, the QB guy is a lot of fun. You mentioned my background. I had the honor to work in the scouting department at Florida International University. Beautiful. Way back when, my first year out of college. I started as an intern, worked into being part of the scouting department. It was really cool to get those write-ups and hand those directly to Mario Cristobal. Yeah. So upgrade from sandwich boy to like scouting reports, that was cool. And over the last years, man, I've done everything from sports radio to fantasy football, and now here with the beautiful Reception Perception.
Well, dude, you've got your own stuff going on too. Pretend GM that you've done scouting reports on, and you and I have known each other for years and years. So it was great to bring you on the team and see your writing and stuff like that. You've been crushing it, man. It's been great.
Thank you.
All right, I tell you what, man. Let's get right into it. And I want to start here with Jackson Dart. 54.8% success rate versus man. The average is around 60%, so well below that average. Much better versus zone. 76.4% success rate versus zone, slightly above the 75% average we look for our quarterbacks. What's the top line message that you would send to Giants fans in regards to Jackson Dart?
Well, Giants fans, I wish I had better news. I think Jackson Dart has a lot of hurdles that he's going to need to overcome in this second year. Most notably is going to be the processing and the speed in which things are getting processed. And oddly enough, for a guy who seems to exude confidence, doesn't quite have all that same confidence when he's actually on the field. And then with the Giants, I mean, you've got all these questions right now with injuries everywhere from the backfield to the receiver room. You got new coaches, new offense. There's a lot there, man. So Jackson Dart's going to have his work cut out for him in 2026.
Can you talk about and expand on the confidence there? Because I read the piece. It's just he kind of sort of double clutches when throwing to certain areas of the field. Expand on the whole confidence conversation, because I know Jackson Dart fans, Giants fans, are going to hear that and say, what is this guy talking about, man? This guy's aura is off the charts. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you talked about, too, like his success rate against man coverage. And there's just a lot of times where Jackson Dart really wants to see it open. And then there's other times where even when he does see it open, he's just not taking that shot over the middle of the field all that often. Particularly, he's good at deep middle, but we're talking about intermediate areas of the field where I want to see him hit a backside dig. I want to see him be able to just sit in the pocket, evaluate the secondary, and be able to go through his reads. And oftentimes the reason, like you're saying, that he will have this really high success rate against zone is because he's hitting a lot of these quick routes, these flats, these outs, passes that are going to get the ball out of his hands really fast, where a corner or whoever's going to be there is going to be pretty far off the receiver. So he's able to hit these little pockets, but what I want to see him do is win in other ways and be a bit more of the complete quarterback.
Okay, let's talk about how his fit might be here with a Matt Nagy offense, which not ideal. It is not ideal. I mean, Matt Nagy, of all offensive coordinators, has he ever elevated somebody? You know, it's like, just elevate someone, anyone. I'm so confused by the addition of Matt Nagy at the offensive coordinator position, because I tell you what, man, the Giants had a lot of time. They had a lot of time to go find their guy, and they settled on a guy in Matt Nagy that, again, has proven time and time and time again, he has not, and I don't think he has ever, elevated the quarterback play of any team that he has been on. So talk about what Jackson Dart's role might be in Matt Nagy's offense.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, looking back at Matt Nagy and what he's been able to do, he's been getting a lot of credit for Patrick Mahomes' rise in his career, right? And then we've kind of seen him with other quarterbacks, and he has a good first year with Mitch Trubisky. And then after that, we kind of see it's consistently bottom 10 offenses with the Bears. And I hate to do this, but there's going to be the comparisons drawn because of their style of play, because of their kind of all or nothing mentality as passers and the way they get a little frantic under pressure. I see a lot of Justin Fields when we're looking at Jackson Dart. And we got to see multiple years of Justin Fields with Matt Nagy. And like you're saying, you never really see the guy get elevated. You kind of just saw a lot of the same. And that's something that I wish we could see more of, especially considering the Giants actually have a very good offensive line. They have a lot of pass catchers. I wouldn't say a lot of them are great, but they have a lot of pass catchers. I don't know that we're going to see the Matt Nagy offense all of a sudden bring Jackson Dart to that next level.
Let's talk about his deep throws a little bit, Jackson Dart, because again, we talk about some of the some of the productivity that, hesitation that he's got thrown to intermediate middle. When you look on a route by route basis too, 28.6% success rate on the 9 route. That is that is not tenable, man. 26.7% success rate versus on post routes. Again, these are not tenable numbers, man. Like, when I saw that, at first I did a double take because I thought, okay, is that like route percentage or success rate? And no, it was success rate, 28.6% success rate on the 9, 26% success rate on the post. My goodness gracious, not getting it done, at least especially on those particular routes when we're talking about throwing deeper routes.
Yeah, and one thing that always gets pointed out to me is, you know, the Giants fans, they do not like me right now, but it's okay. We're going to work on our relationship. It's going to get better. A lot of people like to point out, it's like, hey, man, did you see who he was throwing to? Like, that would be the success rate. The good thing about reception perception is we kind of get to look at this independent of who they're throwing to. Is the ball accurate? Is it on time? Is it in the right place? It wasn't. Like, it just wasn't always there, especially on the nines. And what's crazy is that he threw deep attempts at the highest rate in the class, however, had the worst success rate in class of these quarterbacks. And so the reason I kind of give that all or nothing label to him is that he loves to take these shots downfield, but oftentimes it's just kind of, let's chuck it up and see where it goes. I remember starting the film and the first thing I see is him just tossing a ball up to Jalen Hyatt. And I'm like, that's not the dude you want to throw a 50-50 ball to, man. Like, there's just got to be some better decisions being made. And I know they have some of their new pass catchers there, Malachi Fields, Isaiah Likely, or some bigger bodies there. Maybe that'll help and it'll kind of make him recalibrate where he's throwing to in the field.
I don't know. I think I want to like repeat that for the people in the back. You know, it's like, again, they're going to see the numbers and they all, and again, people who are new to reception perception say this all the time. Like, well, again, it's like you said, look at who he is throwing to. And it's like, no, guys, you have to understand, these charting numbers are somewhat independent of the guys that he is throwing to. It's about location. It's about timing. It's, again, just, is he putting the ball in a spot that his guy can go and make a play? And just far too often, like you said, 28.6% on the... Dude, actually, when I look at the heat map, Jackson Dart, yo, 0% success rate on the deep left. Like, yo, it's what is wild. Going on? That's a crazy number.
Wild. It's absolutely wild, man. And there's just like parts of the field that Jackson Dart either won't throw to,
right,
or he can't complete the passes there. And that deep left, man, I honestly need to go back, because when we finished and I was like, zero? Yeah, that's crazy.
That is what? Insane.
Like, I kind of want to go back and see each of those passes to the deep left.
Can I also say this to our listeners out here? We have like not only have Alfredo Brown, we double check these numbers. We got a second charter who goes through and like, you know, kind of corroborates a lot of these numbers. 0%, bro, to the deep left. That is absolutely insane. And also, let me just say this too. I just wonder, and maybe you can expand on this. I'm not a quarterback's guy, man. Can you talk about his footwork here a little bit? Because I do think that when you throw as a right-handed quarterback, when you do have to throw to the left, you've got to shift your feet just a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're more likely to see stuff develop on the right-hand side because you're throwing right-handed. It takes a little bit extra footwork, not much, but just a little bit, to throw to the left-hand side. And then when you look at the heat map, really, truly, the left side is significantly worse than the right side. Is there something to the footwork there?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the footwork. It's also just the processing, right? Like, yeah. Oftentimes, he's not going to be having to look left first in terms of his reads. And that's a great point. There's not enough time. So, like, for a guy like Jackson Dart, who the Giants' offensive line was really good, he did not have to play out of structure all that often. 10.8% of his throws came outside of the pocket, lowest amongst this class. That's why really? I say... Yeah, and you'd think, you'd actually think the opposite, because he's known right. for running the football. Exactly. However, when it came to passing, he wanted to make the simple reads, the quick reads, and it just wasn't always happening. So I was really surprised on that. And when we talk about his actual technique, the mechanics, this is the kind of boring stuff, but the sickos really like this. There's certain things that he does, especially on the deep ball, where I notice where his mechanics do need to adjust a little bit. Rather than pushing off that back foot sometimes, he does a sort of up and down motion instead of a back and forward motion to really launch that football. And then there's oftentimes where that ball is going to hang in the air way too long for a guy that actually has a strong arm. Like, you see right. complete passes on shorter, and you can see the zip on the pass. And then I don't know if there's just an uncomfortability with it, where maybe at Ole Miss, the guy was always open, and that was just the easy deep ball to throw, that now he's kind of like, I'm just going to keep putting it up. And that's sort of where he lands, in that 50-50 zone.
Okay, so talking about what it might look like for 2026, we talked about Matt Nagy here. Having John Harbaugh, I think, is a bonus. Again, I don't love the offensive coordinator selection, but I think having John Harbaugh is a steadying force. An adult in the room is what Matt and I have talked about in regards to John Harbaugh. But that being said, I just felt like, look, they need to get Malik Nabers back. And it sounds like with the injury, he will be very slow to come back. We might not see the actual full version unleashed of Malik Nabers here in 2026, but they go and add Malachi Fields, they add Darnell Mooney, they add Isaiah Likely. This is along with Cam Scadabo coming back from a significant major injury. It's not the best collection of weapons. You know, you throw my boy Darius Slayton into the mix here as well. But Malachi Fields is a guy that's a contested catch guy. Like, basically what I'm pointing to here, Alfredo, is that Jackson Dart, his best target, most available, most open target might be a tight end in Isaiah Likely. And to me, that's scary.
Yeah, it's super scary. And it's also like the fact too, is that he's got, I'd say, almost three of the same guy between Isaiah Likely, Malachi Fields, and Theo Johnson, that they're all very similar in size, speed, and the way they run their routes. And they're all kind of good at the same thing. The good news is that they're all kind of good at the same thing that Jackson Dart likes. He likes to hit those post routes. He likes to hit corners, and he wants to go for nines. Malachi Fields, despite not testing really well at the combine, is actually a very good deep ball tracker. And he was crushing at the Senior Bowl in one-on-ones, which I know kind of everyone does, but if you're slow, you usually don't win against man coverage on a deep ball like that. Right. So I think there is some hope there. I can definitely see this offense utilizing a lot of flood concepts where, you know what, let's get Jackson Dart rolling out of the pocket a bit more. Let's get him more comfortable where we can make the reads simpler for him. And we can have three big bodies kind of hitting different levels, the short, intermediate, and deep. And when you have those three guys, I think what you can do is you can disguise more things in your offense, and that's going to help them. Where I get worried is the clutch situations, which we chart, which is, you know, third downs, late in games. And a lot of those clutch situations, you would think Jackson Dart is going to target Malik Nabers. Without Malik Nabers there, I don't know that the clutch situations, these third down throws, are going to get any better from him. And he was already worst amongst this class, 31.4%, worst, 10% worse than Shadur, 32% worse than Cam Ward. Like, it just wasn't. It wasn't good in those moments. And I think that's where, if Dart is going to take the next step, this new coaching staff has to be better at finding what makes him comfortable and what's going to help him succeed in those tight spots.
It's those tight spots, those clutch throws too, where that man score, I think, really shows itself, right? And again, going back to the roster, it's not fully independent, but it is, you know, somewhat independent here. That being said, it is fair to point out that you lose Malik Nabers, you lose Cam Scadabo. You know, it was dead man walking out there, man. You get a head coaching change. It was a mess, absolute mess in New York. But that being said, I still look at the roster. I don't see a guy who is a good man separator. Right, like Malachi Fields, not a good man separator. Darnell Mooney, not a good man separator. Isaiah Likely's a tight end. Theo Johnson's a tight end. Like, where are we going to get some improvements against man? Because that truly, when you're talking about third, fourth down, when you talk about in the clutch, you got to go make a throw. Generally, it's against man coverage. So I'm struggling here to see where they are going to get those big time throws. And I don't know. It sounds like you're kind of hesitant in terms of seeing some growth in that area too.
Yeah, and I was kind of hoping that, you know, which one of these guys is going to be the Drake May? I hate that we do this, but we all do it. It's like, sure, who's going to be this next guy going into this year? And especially from like the fantasy football angle of it too. This guy can run. Maybe he can throw. Let's see what's going on. And you just dive into the film and I was surprised, but not in a good way. And I think if we don't have a healthy Malik Nabers, it is just going to make that development that much more challenging for Jackson Dart.
Okay, we move on. We talk about Cam Ward here. You just come out just guns blazing here. Quote, by this time next season, we'll probably be talking about Cam Ward making the biggest jump of any year two quarterback in the NFL. And this, my friends, I think is a very surprising line, mostly because the offseason reports, especially about his accuracy, have not been good. Alfredo, how do you take that, what you wrote there, against what we have heard in regards to early training camp reports? How do you marry those two things together?
My first thing I love to say, it's June. So there's that.
Right.
Also, you have to think too, everything in this offense is brand new for him. New offensive coordinator, new wide receiver one, new wide receiver two. You got Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that everything when playing quarterback comes down to timing. You can have a strong arm and you can be able to put the ball in a location, but it really comes down to timing and how much rapport you develop with these receivers, because every single receiver on that roster is going to run a route differently. Carnell Tate is going to run a route differently than Calvin Ridley. And so a lot of that stuff is getting ironed out now. And oftentimes what coaches will do is say, hey, Cam, we want to see you hit this really challenging route to this receiver who needs to get better at it. And then the numbers from a reporter standpoint are going to look bad. This is not me getting up on the soapbox for Cam Ward, but I think it's important for us to put some context into what these OTA numbers really mean when we're saying, oh, this guy's struggling with accuracy. Is he struggling with accuracy, or are they putting him in situations where we need to iron out timing?
That's not bad. I like that idea. Okay, so when we take a look at some of the numbers here, the reception perception numbers, again, I think they're pretty good, man. 76.6% success rate versus zone. That's a pretty strong number. That's similar to what we have for Jaden Daniels and Baker Mayfield last year. 62.5% success rate versus man. That's better than Jared Goff. Similar to Drake May. And again, he's crossing over these thresholds where we're looking for, right? Like, you want to be over 75% success rate versus zone. You want to be over 60% success rate versus man coverage. And he's crossing those thresholds as a rookie. Alfredo, this is, again, incredibly encouraging numbers considering the counting stats just did not look good at all for Cam Ward.
Yeah, I think you're going to find that with a lot of rookie quarterbacks, right? Like, those interceptions, when they show up in a stat sheet, they might as well be three interceptions. Everyone hates to see that with the rookie quarterbacks, but there were things that he was doing, and I'll keep using this terminology as I talk about these different quarterbacks, where he was just making big boy throws. And when I see a rookie, even if they're not always successful at it, attempting and hitting big boy throws at a decent rate, this tells me, okay, we know what the floor is. We know we're working with a guy that can make NFL reads and can make NFL throws. Now he just has to get better at hitting those NFL throws more and more often. And that was something that we saw from Cam Ward. He was hitting the intermediate part of the field quite often. I just saw a guy who, even under pressure too, in those clutch situations, didn't really struggle all that much. And a lot of that has to do with his ability to create and extend plays and all that. But there was just enough there where I was saying, this guy doesn't seem to get too flustered under the big lights.
There was a couple of throws here that I think make me encouraged about what the future might hold. In particular, look, I think if you're a quarterback, you've got to hit the slant at a pretty high rate. And be really successful on that. 75.5% success rate on the slant route, which I think is really good. It was his most thrown route as well. It's about around league average, but still, considering the weapons that he had, I think that's pretty good. Curl route, 86% success rate. That was the second most real route that he threw, because he threw a lot of screen routes too, but I don't know. For whatever reason, my brain doesn't even look at screen routes and stuff. I'm just
they
like,
don't exist. Cares.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of like real actual routes, you know, like there's the slant and the curl. He threw those at a high rate, and I thought he did a pretty good job at that, right? So we're talking about, you know, in breakers here. So I thought, and I think your charting shows, that Cam Ward was better throwing in breakers than he was throwing to outside the numbers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it ends up being that those in-breakers oftentimes, too, end up turning into, one, it's one of the routes that he was most comfortable throwing, but two, it was also some of the routes that his receivers were most comfortable running. And a lot of times what ended up happening was he was able to create in the backfield and extend the play. And that was something that to kind of take this back to Jackson Dart, when Jackson Dart would extend a play, it would not be to throw the ball. It would be to just take off running, which is why you didn't see a lot of throws out of the pocket. Cam Ward, I mean, this guy was throwing almost exclusively out of the pocket. Like, he was just running constantly. And a lot of times when he's able to extend those plays, take a sidestep from the pressure that's coming at him, it allows the time for that backside dig to develop. And that was something that, as the defense is shifting and kind of chasing him to one side, that backside dig becomes available for him. And he almost uses that as his like secret weapon, his break glass in case of emergency, where I got everybody looking this way, but they don't see what's coming on the backside, and I'm able to hit my wide receiver back over the middle. And it was actually something where I think if to the first eye you give it, to the naked eye, you're saying, oh, he's just under pressure, he found a guy. And other times you're like, he intended to do that. That was actually kind of cool to see him work the defense like that and sort of manipulate everybody.
That's pretty dope. This is a player that is facing a lot of change, right? Mm. So not only is the coaching staff different, the entire wide receiver room is different. I like what Tennessee has done from a team build standpoint to help their young quarterback here. It's Robert Saleh as their head coach. It's Brian Daboll as their OC. I know Daboll gets a lot of flack, but can I just say, I do tend to like his run game setup. And I think there are principles inside of his passing game that I also like as well. I don't know how advanced it is, just because the quarterbacks that he has had to deal with in New York have been, you know, a little up and down. But certainly that first year that we saw with Daniel Jones was fire, right? So I'm hopeful that at least the offensive structure is in place there in Tennessee. But man, you just can't get around the fact that they add Carnell Tate. Yeah, they add Wandale Robinson. They kept Calvin Ridley. By the way, I thought that was an important piece too.
Yeah.
Keeping Calvin Ridley, because he was certainly on the chopping block, but they kept him. It's a good three wide receiver trio. You've got Chim Dike and Elik Ayomanner. They're now depth pieces. They're not starters. They were starters last year. They're now depth pieces. And I think having that starting experience for those guys also helps as depth pieces. So when you look at the pass catching group here for Tennessee, I think they've vastly improved as well.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you can tell what they wanted to do, where Kim Ward wasn't actually throwing the deep ball all that much in this offense. And a lot of that was schemed up and planned. They were trying to get quick passes out, a lot of slants, a lot of screens. Let's just get the ball out of his hands quick, and let's make these guys like DK try to just, you know, perform in space, and Calvin really perform in space. And I'm sure there's still going to be some of that with these guys and getting the ball to Wandale Robinson. But you could tell what they want to do is get more explosive plays out of this offense, because Cam Ward can do it. And so by drafting Carnell Tate as early as they did in the NFL draft, I think they sent a signal of what they wanted to do. And to go back to Cam Ward's route percentages, only 9.4% deep ball rate, lowest amongst this class. However, he had the best nine route success rate at 42% when he did throw them. So you've got a guy that can throw the deep ball really well, and he didn't get the chance to do it that often. Now you add Carnell Tate out of Ohio State, who, that was his specialty, winning deep, winning uncontested catches, being a silky smooth route runner who, like, I've seen the comps to George Pickens, to Calvin Ridley, and it fits exactly what Cam Ward likes to do. So I love the fact that now we're going to have a guy who can take the top off, but then we can still do some of the same things we did last year with Wandale Robinson underneath and hit that backside dig with a guy like Calvin Ridley. Like, there's a lot that can still be done here, so I'm really excited for what it means for Cam Ward in 2026.
When you said that about the nine route, I just was like shocked, right? Because like, what did Cam Ward do at Miami? He bombed it. You know what I mean? That was his. I mean, shoot, you saw him, you know, you saw him all the damn time with where you live. I mean, this is a guy at Miami that was just absolutely bombing deep shots, right? And I wouldn't say, look, his pass catchers there in Miami too, it's not, he had a couple guys, but I don't think there was any, you know, notable dudes that were just separating big time downfield. He could put it on you down there, man. So I am surprised that they kind of sort of shackled him from a deep route perspective there in Tennessee in year number one. But that being said, maybe his offensive line didn't hold up, and there are those kind of concerns as well. I just wanted to talk about, by the way, because some of these numbers to our reception perception fans are going to be new, right? And so when you're looking at benchmarks, when you talk about wide receivers, again, I've talked about a million times, you got to be over that 70% threshold versus man, you got to be over 80% against zone coverage, and you got a general idea of what good wide receivers do down the field. You want to be around 55% on these nines, right? If you're a wide receiver. But if you are a quarterback, it's a lot different, right? You're throwing to not just the best of the best guys. You are throwing to dang near everybody. And sometimes these passes do not work out. The average success rate that we want to see from quarterbacks when we're throwing on the nine route is they want to cross that 40% threshold. Cam Ward, nearly 42% success rate on that nine route. Again, that's a lot. There's just a lot there to get excited about. And again, who was he throwing to, for goodness sakes? Not too many notable players.
James Crochet, Van Jefferson, Xavier Restrepo.
Come on. Hey, listen, Xavier Restrepo is his ex-teammate, but dude, he's not a nine route guy, man. Nah. Come on, brother. Yeah, no, it's tough. And we've talked about some of the struggles that Alec Iomanner had playing that X receiver spot for Tennessee last year too. So no, listen, the coaching staff different, the targets and the guys that are catching the ball are going to be very different. It's a group that I think is, I don't know how good they are on the top line, but I think the baseline is actually really good. The baseline for this pass receiving group is pretty good. When you're talking about Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, Ridley, Gunnar Helm is a young developing tight end, and they brought in Daniel Bellinger, who, by the way, the coaching staff and Brian Daboll in particular are really familiar with here as well. I mean, shoot, we don't talk about, we don't talk about fantasy too often here, but man, if the sleeper king can give you a deep, deep, deep sleeper, shoot, keep an eyeball on Daniel Bellinger. I really like him. I think he's a really, really good football player. So we'll see what that ends up looking like here in 2026. Okay, but let's move on. Let's talk about Shedeur Sanders. Very polarizing player is Shador. There were, I thought, times where I thought, okay, this guy's really making some nice big boy throws, but on a down-to-down consistency basis, look, the Shador Sanders numbers obviously don't look good. 54% success rate versus man, well below that 60% average threshold we're looking for. 73.6% success rate versus man, better, but still slightly below that 75% threshold we are looking for from our quarterbacks here. What can you tell us about Shador Sanders?
So Shador Sanders wants to do all the same things that Cam Ward does, which is let's run around, let's create, and then let's try to make a big play. The problem is that he's not nearly as athletically gifted as Cam Ward in terms of arm strength, in terms of his right. physical ability to move around. And so what we ended up seeing is a guy that thought he could do all the same backyard football stuff that he did in at Colorado with Travis Hunter and then try to do it again in Cleveland. And so many times it just didn't work. And it's also kind of why you see like Travis Hunter, they're saying like, well, he doesn't really know how to run a lot of routes. He just kind of freestyles out there and he's really good at it. So we're still teaching him. And what I kept seeing in this, like this just stuck out so quickly to me, was that he'd have a clean pocket and Shador would just run straight out of the pocket. Mm-hmm. It was so bad that he would have a screen pass and run at the receiver who's catching the screen pass to make the distance shorter. And it was the weirdest thing.
That's bizarre.
And I don't know if it's just, he kind of plays football the way a teenager plays Madden. Let's chuck it deep, hit the short routes, and run around. And that's basically what I just kept seeing from him. And I think that if he can find some sort of structure in Todd Monken's offense, maybe there's a better quarterback in there.
Talk to me about what he does well, though. And again, I thought there were times when, you know, I was surprised and impressed by some of the throws that he put on film. And I think it's those moments that Shador fans really hold on to, where you're like, man, that was a really freaking good throw. And it's those highs that I think people point to and say, no, this guy can play. But if there was something that Shador Sanders does well, what would you point to?
I think he's actually pretty good at just taking what's given to him. I think that we don't see a guy that tries to push the ball and make crazy plays all that often, because he is really good at just hitting the slants, hitting the curls, and doing what is necessary for the team to just kind of keep progressing the ball downfield little by little. It's those lapses in judgment where he goes, okay, I'm going to run around now. Or I'm just like, no, dude, just keep doing what you're good at. And that's why I say, if Todd Monken can give him some structure, man, him hitting Casey Concepcion and Harold Fannin and Denzel Boston and a bunch of these different guys, where we're not quite sure how good the pass catching group is going to be, but if there's some structure there, I think it can be better for him, because he was really good on curls, really good on slants. The quick game concepts all worked for him. It's when you asked him to sit in the pocket and keep reading and make a second read and a third read and go through his progressions, where you're like, oh no, what have we done? And then he just starts to run around and it gets a little out of control for him.
Okay, so again, you hit on it just a little bit here, but I am actually excited about Todd Monken coming into the building. It just was, look, I really like Kevin Stefanski. Like, I just think he's a great, I mean, dude, he's two-time coach of the year. Okay, so he's a good coach. But that being said, his style to me was like oil and water with Shador. I think Shador is more comfortable in shotgun, being able to kind of sort of, you know, survey the field here a little bit and just make quick decisions, right? Whereas Stefanski wants you to get under center and you know, make plays, right? So, like, you know, we're going to go do some play action and then we're going to try to bomb you over the top. Shador, well, and to a degree, Deshaun and Deshaun Watson as well. Oh my God, why do I have to talk about Deshaun Watson? But no, Shador Sanders, though, I think is going to fit in well with Todd Monken, who I think is going to utilize a lot more shotgun approaches. They overhaul the wide receiver room. Casey Concepcion, as you mentioned, Denzel Boston on the outside. I really liked him too, coming out of Washington. They've got Jerry Jeudy, and Harold Fannin was a huge, you know, bonus and pickup for them. I mean, let's be real. Fannin was basically their brightest spot on their offense. And, you know, while he while people may have been high on Fannin, I think there was a huge question mark coming out of Bowling Green. And yeah, man, he answered all those questions with flying colors. So it's a pass catching group now that I think is actually pretty good when you look at KC, Denzel Boston, Jerry Jeudy, Harold Fannin.
Well, I mean, you start to look around too and you start to say, man, they kind of have their own little version of the Cleveland Ravens here, where Concepcion can be in the Zay Flowers role, and you've got Harold Fannin sort of doing a combo Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely thing here bit. And I think whatever Monken decides to do, it is going to help whoever the quarterback is. And honestly, if I'm Cleveland, just go with Shador, man. Like, just do it and see what you got there. If you don't have anything, cool, let's go to the next guy. Let's see what Talon Green's got. Like, let's just go nuts. Trying to compete right now, it's just not smart, especially in their division. Something you said that I really want to touch on here is the play action stuff and going under center. And if quarterbacks are not used to that, which Shador did not have to do coming out of Colorado, what happens is that, and maybe people aren't used to seeing this or talking about it, but with play action, oftentimes, especially from under center, you're turning your back to the defense. So you are hoping and praying that your receiver is running his proper route on time, and that the defense didn't change something last second, where maybe we get a robber coverage of a safety coming down or someone changing a look on you while you're taking that 1.5 seconds to fake a handoff to the running back. And then you got to now try to make a read in another 1.5 seconds before the blitz is getting to you. So there's a lot there that Shador already struggles with those things. And those struggles got compounded last year, which is why Harold Fannin ended up being the guy. He's like, oh, thank God, Harold Fannin's still standing here at the line of scrimmage. And Fannin would just do a quick chip, turn around, and the ball's there for him. And that's what ended up happening with that offense. I think now with a little more time and a little more vision, it's you know what it kind of reminds me of too, James? It's the running backs that are now kind of doing the weird Michael Myers stance in the backfield, where they just stand straight up instead of being in the more athletic position. It's so that they can see the defense. And it's more time for them to actually see where players are lining up. Like, we see Ashton Jeanty and Jahmyr Gibbs and a bunch of these guys that are standing like that. This is kind of the same version for quarterbacks, man. Leave them in shotgun if they're more comfortable there. And you can still run play action from shotgun where your quarterback can have his eyes downfield. But turning his back, I think you got to reserve that for the best of the best, man. If your quarterback can't do it, don't make him do it.
That being said, I mean, it's just such a staple of offenses that you've got to do it a little. You know, there has to
for
be.
Sure. And if you're gonna do that, let him roll out. Let's get some boot in there, right? Like let's get him out of the pocket and make the throw simple for him. A lot of times though, that's not happening, especially in Cleveland, where the offensive line wasn't good. Like they started to crumble a bit last year, and they've revamped that all for this year.
I've said this a million times. We're getting into like the football weeds here, but I've said this a lot. Like this is why the Shanahan system works, right? Like this is why when McVay was also running that Shanahan wide zone system, it works because you're moving everybody, right? When you run outside zone, the entire line moves, the quarterback moves, the running back moves, like everyone is moving, and it forces defenses to also move. But when you do that and you've got a young quarterback come doing play action off of wide zone, well, once they turn around, you've cut the field pretty much in half, which is kind of sort of nice for them, you know. But and to your point, like they're able to make that read a little bit cleaner, a little bit quicker, because they're not having to scan so much of the field, you know. So I don't know, man. Like, again, I really think that when you're talking about play action, you know, run it off a wide zone, I think that helps you extensively. And I don't think they did a lot of that in Cleveland, despite the fact that Stefanski is a wide zone guy. Like, that's what's so interesting to me, you know. They really didn't utilize a ton, or at least as much as I'd like to have seen, wide zone stuff. And maybe it's to your point that the offensive line, it just wasn't good enough, because we see this in college, and I know you've seen a lot of college tape, but it's just there's not a lot of offensive lines that run wide zone. Why? Because they're not good, you know? And it requires offensive linemen to make reads. It requires offensive linemen to be more athletic, just like they are in the NFL, but not necessarily at the collegiate level. Anyways, we're getting really into the weeds here, but that's okay.
What is that?
Oh, yeah, it's a World Cup. Holder?
Like the soccer tournament World Cup?
Holder. For the world. Fits every car, holds every cup.
It has a Carvana logo?
Carvana made it. They buy and sell cars, so they made a car cup holder. So, got any good cups lately?
Used to, just couldn't figure out where in the world to put them.
The World Cup Holder, brought to you by Carvana, proud sponsors of the World Cup Holder.
Sign up today to win yours at cup-holder2026.com. Not authorized or endorsed by FIFA, not a real product, for parity and fair use purposes only.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Okay, I want to talk about J.J. McCarthy here just a little bit. I don't know, man. Is there any good to take away from the J.J. McCarthy charting?
Okay, so this is so weird. Like, I've been trying to talk about J.J. McCarthy with some sort of nuance, and it's like, hey, let's not toss the baby out with the bathwater. It's eight full games with J.J. McCarthy. And if I don't love him, Vikings fans crush me. If I say that J.J. McCarthy's not that bad, I get fans of every other team saying, correct, like, are you crazy? What a bizarro correct world we live in. And I'm like, guys, like, he's good right at some things. He was okay, not a very good quarterback last year.
No.
Not many quarterbacks are good in their first eight full games in the NFL. And what I noticed that was so different about him was that his rookie season is very different from most NFL quarterbacks' rookie seasons. One, he was in his second year coming off of an injury. Yep. And you could maybe say, like, oh, well, then he should have done better. He should have known the offense more. But this is a guy who didn't have a whole lot of throws coming out of Michigan anyways. That was a very run-heavy offense.
Yep.
But Kevin O'Connell asked something of his quarterbacks that not a lot of head coaches did when I was scouting and charting through these other quarterbacks, which is he was really forcing J.J. McCarthy to throw the ball downfield, work timing routes, and we're getting all that simple stuff out of here. Like, we were not seeing a lot of the slants and outs and curls, or excuse me, not outs, but like quick outs, you know, like hitting the flats. We weren't getting these dump off plays. J.J. McCarthy was being asked to throw deep outs and posts and corners and do a lot of things that required timing and understanding. And now they're talking about it in camp that J.J. McCarthy's gotten better at layering the ball, which was something that he's never really had to do. The Michigan offense wasn't asking him to do that. So we really got to see his first eight games of him making real NFL throws. It had its ups, it's had its downs, but I think there's enough there where you're saying this ball of clay can actually still be formed. Like, there's something there.
Okay, I want to focus in on his slant route, because if there is one area where I thought, you know, again, he did well, it was the slant. You showed it there in the 85.7% success rate on the slant route. That was really good. By the way, to Alfredo's point, just 5.1 route participation or route percentage thrown to the slant. That is outrageously low.
Yeah.
I mean, outrageously low. That needs to be double digits for it to be 5.1%. Route percentage on the slant is crazy. 7% on the flat. Again, that's crazy. I'm not saying that you just need to throw slants and flats and screens, but that has to be a healthy part of your pass diet. It just has to be. I mean, in today's modern NFL, you have to have some of these, you know, easier throws to set up the deeper throws. So you've got to get the defense crowding the line a little bit more if you want to open up that intermediate dig route. Man, that linebacker's got to get a little tighter to the line, man. Otherwise, that throw becomes incredibly difficult. But again, Alfredo, you take a look at some of these throw percentages and you're saying to yourself, okay, well, why didn't they do that? I think the counter argument to that and the counter argument to what you were saying is maybe JJ just doesn't throw those things, you know? And I think that's part of it too, is that, yeah, Kevin O'Connell, KOC did ask him to make some big boy throws. But at the same time, I just saw a guy in JJ McCarthy that would pass over some of the easier throws to go big play hunting. And far too often, it just didn't work.
Yeah, and then that's definitely part of it, right? Like you need to be able to do, he's got to do the Shadur thing, which is, you know, be willing to take stuff that defenses are giving him. JJ McCarthy had the highest first read target rate, or second highest in the NFL at 70.8. And so there was just a lot of times where he was like, yes, coach, I'll go out there and throw this route. This is my first read. I'm going to make that read. And I'm going to try to play within the structure. The problem is, and this was something I was talking about on Twitter the other day, is that he can play within structure. He's not quite there with playing on time with accuracy. He can play on time within structure. And those are two different things. And I want to create that caveat there where he will make throws where he's a step behind. But he's doing exactly what the coach wants him to do. He's just not doing it well. Yeah. And then the problem here, too, is like some of those easy throws, those slants, those things that happen. It's also the way that the play is set up. 26.4% under center rate, more than double of anyone else in this class. Like he was just under center all the time. Faced man coverage at a 37% rate, highest in the class, because defenses were like, hey, we're gonna make you beat us. And see if you can get the timing down on these. And it was tough for him to do that. And then his 20.5 pressure rate, highest in the class. So you got a guy who's playing under center a lot, playing against man, getting a lot of blitzing coming at him, and then being told, hey, buddy, you don't have a lot of time. Just make that first throw and play within the structure. So it was just kind of a perfect storm of like, almost JJ McCarthy didn't have a choice but to go deep play hunting every single time. And I think that he needs to get more comfortable with moving out of the pocket, getting to his second and third reads and saying, okay, I can do the in structure thing, but I'm also good enough to play out of structure and make better decisions.
Again, we talked about how the charting is independent of talent. That being said, the talent surrounding JJ McCarthy was really good, which is why I think he was getting crushed by football fans too. And I'm one of those people where, listen, if your head coach is Kevin O'Connell, if you're throwing to one of the best, you know, wide receivers in the game. I don't know, man. Like Justin Jefferson is on your team. You know what I mean? Like Jordan Addison is a really good number two. We've got to be better. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I get it. I understand. Like the charting numbers are independent of that, but I find it difficult to believe that some of these numbers are the way they are. And oh, by the way, like he was fine. Like in terms of like the overall numbers, he was fine. I should say that. I should start by saying that as well. But it just, the bed of which he is laying in is really, really nice. And it's about as nice of a situation as a young quarterback can get. And yet we saw some somewhat disastrous results. And I think a lot of that is just, man, brother, can you just throw the dang ball? I don't know why he was so late on some of these throws. And I think those are the throws that stick out to me.
Yeah. I mean, developmentally, he's just not there yet, right? Like this is the quarterback version of being born on third base. Like you're in a Kevin O'Connell offense with Justin Jefferson, bro. Like it shouldn't be that hard, but it was for him because remember when he was getting drafted, we were talking about him in the same light as Anthony Richardson, a guy that didn't have a lot of experience under his belt that's going to need a lot of time. People were shocked he got drafted as high as he did. But hey, you know, there's some talent in there that maybe Kevin O'Connell can unearth. And I still think it's there. Like, I still think he absolutely can. Seeing a guy that had a 70% success rate on posts, that's a very difficult route for him to have to hit. Splitting the safeties, deep middle of the field. Yeah. There was a lot of times where I was saying, man, there's flashes of a guy that could be really good. I was calling him like the poster child for almost. He almost threw an interception on every play or almost threw a touchdown on every play. Like it just felt like it felt like he was just a few inches away from making one play or the other. And what ended up happening was these interceptions and these bad throws came under the biggest lights, a guy that was just simply not ready for it. And maybe he doesn't progress. maybe he doesn't progress and get better at it. But I'll be honest, I don't know that Kyler Murray is a good fit for this offense.
Oh, either. He's not. Yeah, no, like, I don't think so.
He's just not. He's not a structure-based guy. He's more improvisational. This is going to be weird.
And the thing is, he never throws to the intermediate middle of the field, and that is absolutely where a Kevin O'Connell offense is going to attack, right? So, like, I think he's obviously better than J.J. McCarthy, but it's still overall a really weird fit to have Kyler Murray in this Kevin O'Connell offense. Let me give some overall numbers here for J.J. McCarthy. So 51.5% success rate versus man. It's one of the lowest numbers you will find. Again, you want to be around 60%. He's at 50, we'll call it 52%. So well below what you want to see in regards to beating man coverage. And then against zone coverage, he was better, but still somewhat below average, 73.3% success rate versus zone. Again, we'd like to see a decent quarterback. I'm not even talking about the best of the best. I'm talking about just a decent quarterback cross over that 75% threshold. Now, this was his first full season, so you give him a little bit of a pass on there, but you grade him a little bit harder because, again, JJ, you're talking about JJ McCarthy throwing to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison in a Kevin O'Connell offense. you got to be better than, one of the worst success rates versus man and just slightly below average against zone. I don't know. That's just kind of sort of my thought.
Yeah, I think with some of these things, these numbers get better as the routes get easier. And that's sort of the sliding scale, right? If he's throwing more of those slants and curls, all of a sudden we're going, hey, he's got a decent success rate against zone, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, he's still got to hit these throws. Like, there were just too many throws where the ball's 5 yards over the head of the receiver, and it's just not there. You can't let that happen when you got Justin Jefferson open.
I think, and again, it's just when you watch a lot of football, what you see with J.J. McCarthy is just his misses were so loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just like, dang, that looks so weird and so bad. But on a down-by-down basis, I think you have shown through your charting here that he's not quite as bad as some of his as his loud misses would indicate. I think that is probably a fair way to assess what we got from 2025 J.J. McCarthy. Okay, I want to talk here very quickly about Tyler Shuck. I think it's really interesting. A lot of like football evaluators, like people who watch a lot of football, watch Tyler Shuck and are like, you know what? This dude, very quietly, he's kind of tough, man. Like, he's this guy's pretty good. And I tell you what, man, like, your charting shows a guy that Tyler Shuck, in, I know he's a much, much older rookie quarterback, but golly, he kind of sort of played like a veteran, man. And I think a lot of your numbers show that too.
Yeah, I think it's easy with a lot of these guys where, in the world of meme culture, where it's just like a guy makes one loud mistake, to kind of steal your terminology here, we are going to let that live forever. So Tyler Shuck being older, we're like, oh, okay, so he's retiring next year. Ha, ha, ha. Or he makes like one bad throw at the combine. We're like, look at this guy. He can't even complete passes with no defenders.
Right.
And then he gets to play and we're like, oh, he's decent. He's not bad. And there was a lot made of it, of his age. And like, dude, he was the backup to Justin Herbert in college.
Dude,
that's crazy. That's how old Tyler Shuck is and how long he's been playing and how many different schools he's been at. And he's a guy that has all the tools. He's got the size, he's got the arm strength, and he has the accuracy. And what I was most surprised with is I thought we were going to be having a guy that was just going to be fumbling his way under pressure. And he did not. He was very good. He was pressured on 16.2% of his dropbacks, second highest in the class, but then had a 62.5% success rate under pressure, second best in the class.
Wow.
And he seemed to still be very comfortable when things broke down. I saw a guy that when he needed to get out of the pocket, his eyes remained downfield. And meanwhile, this was all with, not, this isn't to put him down, but with just Chris Olave there as the target earner. There's some Juwan Johnson baked in here, but then you had a lot of like Mason Tipton and Devon Vele. And for Tyler Shuck to still be putting up these numbers with those guys, I am stoked to see what he can do with Jordan Tyson added into this mix.
Yeah, well, Jordan Tyson has got to stay healthy, so we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see how that. Yeah, yeah. But no, I to your point, though, I think a wide receiver trio of Olave, Jordan Tyson, and Devon Vile, I actually think that's pretty nice. You've got a top-end guy, I should also say, to be 100% fair and transparent. Chris Olave also needs to stay healthy. My goodness. I mean, just the random injuries. I know the concussions will always be a concern, but he was on blood thinners or whatever it was, and man, that's not something that you want to mess around with here. So, no, Chris Olave, Jordan Tyson, and Devon Vile, when healthy. Bro, if we could play this season on Madden with injuries turned off, that's a nice trio. Unfortunately, we live in the real world, and yeah. Olave, Tyson are not necessarily, you know, the bellwether of health here. So we'll see if these guys can stay healthy. But can I talk about some of this of Tyler Shuck's overall numbers here? 66% success rate against man coverage. It's one of the best numbers you're going to find, honestly. I mean, again, he's within shouting distance of like guys like Bo Nix and Josh Allen. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the kind of guy that you're like, how is this guy a first year quarterback? He's beaten man coverage at a pretty high rate. And to your point, Olave was really his only reliable man beater, and yet he's still getting it done. And then he crosses the 80% threshold against zone coverage. Shoot, man, this is really, really impressive stuff. Again, the average that you want to cross over is 75%. When you get over 80%, now we're talking elite, right? Now we're talking like Josh Allen. Jared Goff is the leader in the clubhouse. But again, we all know he's so good against zone coverage. So Tyler Shuck across in that 80% threshold, Alfredo, yo, this is, again, a first-year quarterback. This is so incredibly impressive what he has put on tape.
Dude, I was so surprised when I got into this. And I already liked Tyler Shuck. I left this loving Tyler Shuck.
Yeah.
And thinking this could be the guy. Like, I think Cam Ward maybe makes the biggest jump from where he was to where he could be. But I think Tyler Shuck might actually be the best quarterback out of this group by the end of next year, where we're saying, like, damn, the Saints are competing for playoff spots and Tyler Shuck is looking really good. Is he a top 12 or top 10 quarterback in the league? If everything stays healthy in New Orleans, because I mean, we look around, like, first out of this rookie class and against man coverage, against zone coverage, first on short throws, best against intermediate routes, second on deep throws. Like, there really just wasn't a weakness in the charting or in the heat map. And then you look at all the routes and he's throwing big boy routes and he's highly successful with these tough routes. Like, there wasn't an Achilles heel to his game like I expected there to be. And that makes me really, really excited, especially for what he can do in and out of structure in a Kellen Moore offense and being able to attack with these weapons. I'm really, really excited for him.
In today's modern NFL, you have to attack the intermediate middle, and he posted an 84% success rate throwing to the intermediate middle. That's wild. That's wild. And again, he was one of the absolute best, one of the best throwing to the intermediate area just in general, whether it's right, left, or middle. He was one of the best guys. And again, it's just, if you want to be successful in today's modern NFL, that's the area of the football field you have to attack. And Tyler Shuck is doing an incredible job doing that. And man, by the way, big ups to Kellen Moore. When we start talking about best coaches in the NFL, I don't think Kellen Moore got enough credit. And dude, man, the structure that he put together there in New Orleans, and by the way, the structure that he must have put together there in Philadelphia, because the structure was such a downgrade in Philadelphia. Guys are getting fired. AJ Brown's getting traded. I mean, come on now. Kellen Moore going from Philadelphia to New Orleans. It's just, he's not getting enough credit. And let me be the first person to say, just out the gates, I think he did a fantastic job. He should have gotten more Coach of the Year consideration.
Oh, absolutely. We should be talking about him and his offenses the way that everybody glamorizes Mike McDaniel and what he was able to do in Miami with an MVP candidate, Tyreek Hill. I mean, we gotta be able to look at Kellen Moore and say, this guy's, remember, the Saints were projected to be one of the worst teams in the NFL last year.
Totally.
And now we're talking about, like, hey, they're probably a playoff team and they look good. It's nuts. Kellen Moore does not get the love that he should get. And this year, second easiest schedule in the league. in terms of the win percentage and the power ranking of that, and then 9 indoor games. So you're going to have some good conditions, good opponents, or easy opponents, I should say, and a team that should only be getting better, man. Like, I'm all in on the Saints this year.
And you know what? Can I also just applaud what he did at the quarterback position too? Because he started with Spencer Rattler. Mm-hmm. He allowed his young guy to develop just a little bit. And he also kind of, I think he wanted to see what he had in Spencer Rattler, right? And when he wasn't getting the job done, he just ripped that Band-Aid right off. He's like, you know what? Screw it. We're throwing in Tyler Shough. Let's go. And the offense immediately improved. It was, man, I just thought he did a fantastic, maybe a perfect job handling the quarterback position last year, handling the offense, getting guys in positions to succeed. We talk this way about guys like Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Kevin O'Connell. We talk about them this way. We don't talk about, I don't think we spent enough, nearly enough time because of the wins and losses. We don't talk about, the Saints in that way. But this was a roster that was, to your point, I thought really bereft of a lot of high-end talent. I still feel that way. But they did improve along their offensive side too. Now, I don't know how big of an improvement it's going to be, but still, I think it's still an improvement. I like Oscar Delp as a young tight end. You add in, again, Jordan Tyson into that mix too. You go pick up Travis Etienne as you're starting running back. Alvin Kamara is still there. I don't know how involved he's going to be. But again, if we're holding Alvin Kamara and resting him and allowing him to kind of sort of play 16 games without getting worn down, that's a really good running back combo between Etienne and Alvin Kamara. But overall, Alfredo, I cannot extol the virtues of this coaching staff enough. I think Kellen Moore's done an incredible job, and I'm really excited to see what the Saints do on the football field this year.
Yeah, 100%, man. And then the way you bring up Alvin Kamara there, we'll see what ends up happening.
Yeah.
But I think the thing lost in there too is that Alvin Kamara missed a lot of time. So it's not like there were not a lot of targets for Tyler Shough to throw to, but then his running backs were Devin Neal, a guy who was third or fourth in the depth chart, you know, and Alvin Kamara, even when he was out there, he wasn't all that efficient. So
no, he wasn't.
We're just going to see a better running back, better offensive line, better pass catchers. This could be something good for the New Orleans Saints.
By the way, okay, you've heard about all these quarterback profiles. Shoot, go to the website, man. Receptionperception.com. There's a full breakdown on all of these guys. 1,000 words or more on all these players that we just talked about here. There's so much to dig into. And when you look at some of the numbers, man, really, really interesting stuff. So go to receptionperception.com. Alfredo, tell them where they can find your work on Twitter and all that.
Yeah, you can find me on any of the social media platforms at Alfredo A. Brown. Like you mentioned before, I've got the Pretend GM where I do some fantasy football stuff as well. Guys, please go see the profiles. I want to keep this job. I like writing about quarterbacks and working with James and Matt. It's a lot of fun. Just let's get that traffic going, man. Get let's over to receptionperception.com.
Let's go. Alfredo, we appreciate you taking the time, brother. And when the next batch of quarterback profiles hits the site, we will for sure, bring you on board as well. So he's done some charting here on guys like Jared Goff, Aaron Rodgers, and the like, and he's moving on to some of the more veteran quarterbacks in the NFL. So really interesting numbers and findings that he's got, does Alfredo Brown. All right, we got to get out of here, but remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m., AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.